have something interesting in the beginning of the Sedra that's similar to something at the end of the Sedra. And that is that the Sedra starts with Kiseitse la milchama loidecha, and you go out to battle your enemy. So the Arizal says that allegorically this battle can be compared to the battle that one makes with his Yetzer Hara. And the Mesillas Yesharim points out that there was once a group of soldiers coming back from a battle, and a wise man met them and said, "Now you're going into the real war. Now you're back where you're going to be fighting your Yetzer Hara. That's a much more real battle than the battle you're coming from." So, therefore, the Sedra starts allegorically with the need to fight the Yetzer Hara. Now, according to the Meiri, the Sedra ends with the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. And the Meiri says that allegorically, Amalek is all the evil in the world that a person has to destroy and totally obliterate its memory. And it also hints to the way that a person has to deal with his Yetzer Hara. There's only one problem, and that is the allegory in the beginning of the Sedra needs explanation. The allegory in the end of the Sedra, that the fight with the Yetzer Hara is like fighting with Amalek, where he has to be destroyed, I understand. But the beginning of the Sedra is talking about a war where you're allowed to take captives. Now, if it would be a milchemes mitzvah, right, a obligatory war, that's a mitzvah to do, which is basically the war that we make with the seven nations, or Amalek, so you wouldn't be able to take captives. So it must be talking about a milchemes reshus, a voluntary war. If that's the case, how does that compare to the fight with the Yetzer Hara? How can one fight the Yetzer Hara and it allegorically be compared to a war that you're not responsible to fight, a war that is totally voluntary? That's the question. Okay, I understand the allegory. But since that war has to be talking about a voluntary war, a war that you opt to start, not one that you have to start, how can that be compared to the war with the Yetzer Hara, which obviously is a chova, it's a something that you must do, and it's a mitzvah? So I have a few different ways of explaining this allegory. The first is based on a kliyoker way back in the beginning of the Torah, when Cain kills Hevel, and God gives him the first Musar Shmuz in existence, and he tells him, Imtetiv Se'es, if you better your ways, I will forgive you. Vim lo Seitiv, if you don't better your ways, Lepesa Chatas Rovets. The Chatas, the Yetzer Hara, is waiting and crouching at the door. Says the Kli Yoker, one of his explanations. It says in Chazal that the Yetzer Hara is compared to a fly. And he says one of the ideas of the comparison is the following. A fly, its mouth is very weak. If you have a whole apple, the fly can't make can't make any indentation in it. Can't do anything to the apple. But if you already took a bite out of the apple, then the fly already can take from where there is an opening. Same thing with the Yetzer Hara. If you don't let your guard down and you don't give the Yetzer Hara an opening, then you have a better chance of warding him off. But if you give the Yetzer Hara a place to start, you open a door, you open even a little crack, then the Yetzer Hara can come and widen that crack very, very much. Therefore, you can't start fighting with your Yetzer Hara when it is obligatory, when it's a mitzvah, when you're dealing already with the issues that are permissible and prohibited, because then you've almost lost the battle, because you've already given him a foot in the door. What you have to do is fight the Yetzer Hara before it comes to anything that's prohibited, in order to see to it that you don't let even an opening, you don't let even a crack in the door, meaning the following. If you start fighting your Yetzer Hara when you already have a desire to eat something not kosher, and you've never worked on your ability to control your desires even for permissible things, then you've already given the Yetzer Hara a opening, because you have let your appetite get the better of you, even in permissible things. So now when your appetite is for something prohibited, the door is opened already. But if you have already trained yourself to control your appetite even for permissible things, not to overeat, to leave that little bit left on your plate, to show that you have self-control, not to eat everything, but to be choosy of what you eat and what you don't eat, right? To make sure that you eat things that are healthy and that will aid you in serving God and not the opposite, then you've started the war on things that are not prohibited, that are totally permissible. And the war is therefore not a obligatory war, but a voluntary war. But if you start the war when it's voluntary, then when the obligatory war comes, the things that you must fight, the Yetzer Hara, the things that you have an appetite that are prohibited, where you have to fight, there your chances of winning become much greater. So therefore the first idea in this allegory is that yes, the fight with the Yetzer Hara is hinted to in a voluntary war, because that's where the fight starts. It can't start on grounds of permissible and prohibited, because if you start there, you've already given the Yetzer Hara an in. You must start way before there, before there are things that are prohibited, and that way you don't even give the Yetzer Hara an in and an opening. Okay. Now, that can be understood very simply, that the best defense is a good offense. So if you take a preemptive strike, right, you're going to be able to defend yourself better. But there's another idea, I think. And I think the Kli Yoker hints to it. I just looked up the Kli Yoker, and I see that in one sentence he hints to this idea. And that's the following. When it comes to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the main thing is not quantity, but quality. And that's what Chazal say, Echad HaMarbe VeEchad HaMamit. Right, it doesn't make a difference if a person does a lot or a little, right? The main thing is, what is your kavana? How perfect is what you're doing? Perfection, completion, completeness is more important than quantity. The halacha bears that out. If you're going to eat two pieces of bread, and you want to know which one to make the motzi on, which one are you going to make the motzi? You have a little dinner roll, and you have this gigantic wedding challah, but somebody cut off the end. So the challah is 5 feet long, but missing an inch of the end. And the other one is a little dinner roll. Which one do you make the bracha on? The dinner roll. Why? Because that's shalim. It's complete. And the other one may be bigger, but it's not complete. Completeness when it comes to serving Hashem is more important than quantity. Therefore, as long as you don't have even a small blemish, you haven't opened that door, you're still whole vis-a-vis what you're fighting the Yetzer Hara on, then you have a greater chance. Because the Yetzer Hara has a hard time against things that are complete, that are whole. But when you've lost that completeness, you've lost that shlemus, that perfection, and you're already imperfect and blemished, then the Yetzer Hara can attack you. So therefore, the first allegory, the first aspect of this allegory of fighting the Yetzer Hara in a voluntary war, not a obligatory war, is this concept. You got to start the fight before you have to be on the defensive. You have to make the offensive, the preemptive strike. Otherwise, you've given the Yetzer Hara a foot in the door. Second idea. Second aspect of the allegory of fighting the Yetzer Hara, where it is a voluntary battle and not an obligatory one. Michtam Eliyahu compares the fight of the with the Yetzer Hara to a war. In a war, there are three areas. There's the area you've conquered. The war's not going on that area. That's your stronghold, your side. Then there's the side that the Yetzer Hara, or the enemy, is conquered. The war's not going on over there either. That's already conquered by the Yetzer Hara. Where is the war? In no man's land. You haven't conquered, he hasn't conquered, it's the place between you. Now, where that no man's land is changes from person to person. I'll give you an example. For one person, the prohibition of stealing, he understands to mean to go into a store and take something. That's stealing. Okay? And to rob a bank or whatever, that's stealing. Okay? That person has his free choice to go rob banks or not. He understands it's wrong to rob banks. He has a Yetzer Hara to rob banks. He knows that that's called stealing, and has his fight with his Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer Hara on that ground. That is the no man's land for him. What has already been conquered by the Yetzer Hara is shoplifting. He doesn't think twice about shoplifting. He already justified it. That's not stealing, because anyway, they overcharge you, and they take into consideration that they charge people extra because people shoplift, so I'm just, making the books even. Okay? So he doesn't consider shoplifting stealing. On the other hand, he never would murder somebody, an armed robbery, that he doesn't do. So the Yetzer HaTov has conquered armed robbery. The Yetzer Hara has conquered shoplifting, or let's say cheating on your taxes, and the war is in that middle ground of going and robbing a bank, holding up a convenience store. Somebody on a higher level would never think of robbing anybody. Okay, maybe his Yetzer Hara is shoplifting. That's the middle ground. And the Yetzer Hara, by him, has already conquered, let's say, cheating on his taxes. Shoplifting, he could go either way. Cheating on his taxes, he always cheats. And robbing anything, just going into a store and robbing, he never would do. So his, Nekudas HaBechira, where his point of free choice is different than the other person. Then you have a person who's a bigger tzaddik. He wouldn't consider cheating. He wouldn't consider any of those things. Those are already conquered by his Yetzer HaTov, right? And where is the idea that he has to think? By slamming a door and waking somebody up, stealing their sleep, stealing somebody's ideas. Now, each of these people, where they have an active freedom of choice, is in that area of stealing that hasn't yet been conquered by their Yetzer HaTov or the Yetzer Hara. And it fluctuates by each one. When each of those, this guy will shoplift, and this guy will cheat on his taxes, and this guy will slam the door, they're all committing the same sin in a different way. The sin is stealing. And in the mind of each one, stealing is what he has the fight on. So, therefore, it explains why the Torah sometimes describes the sins of great people, which were really very subtle things in the most demeaning way. David HaMelech, right, is accused of adultery, when the Gemara says that really there was no adultery there, that the woman was a divorced woman, and because everybody who went into battle wrote his wife a divorce. So then why did it say that he committed adultery? Because on his level, the sin of adultery is not only committing adultery. The sin of adultery is being immodest on the level that you understand. And for David HaMelech, the immodesty of adultery for a regular person on his level was over here. So the Torah is calling the way that is. The same way that slamming the door is called stealing just as much as holding up the convenience store. Especially where you're holding. Now a person will get rewarded for making his bechira more sublime, more refined. He'll get punished for letting himself let go and make his bechira less sublime, less refined. But the place where you really have free choice, where the major reward and punishment at any moment is in that no man's land. And for everybody it's different. Now therefore, it would stand to reason that the farther you get away from the sin of letting it conquer you, and the more it's conquered for the good, the better you're off than ever not to commit that sin. For instance, if I've conquered for myself, I don't cheat on my taxes, don't armed rob, I don't rob plane, I don't shoplift, right? So I'm way farther removed from those sins than somebody who has the desire to do it or not. Let me give another example. Somebody who is a fresh Baal Tshuva, who's a smoker, and is keeping his first Shabbos, is going to have a tremendous fight with his Yetzer Hara, should he smoke or not. But a person who's been frum for years and years doesn't wake up Shabbos morning and have this fight mentally, should I smoke this Shabbos or not? It's just out of the question. So the more you conquer for your Yetzer HaTov, the farther away you are from ever doing that sin, even though you have free choice, but basically it's irrelevant. Because you're far away from the free choice because you've already conquered it and made it a habit for the good. Therefore, another part of this allegory of fighting the Yetzer Hara, where it's a voluntary battle, is that if you constantly conquer things and make them habitual for the good, you are distancing yourself from no man's land and creating more and more of your own territory, which will protect you from the enemy. Okay? And that is one of the ideas of precious. In other words, separate yourself from things that could bring you to do things wrong, even though they're not wrong themselves, because then you basically, in a war, one of the reasons for a voluntary war is that you want to capture more territory, add to your territory. Same thing over here. You want to add territory which will keep you farther away from no man's land where the war is going on. So you're more protected. Second idea. Third idea. There's a third reason for making a voluntary war. And that is to boost the economy of the country. It says that David HaMelech's advisors would come to him every day and they would review the economy. And if there wasn't enough money in the economy, then one of the ways of remedying that was to go out and battle some people and to take their assets and add to the economy. So you add and bolster your assets by making a voluntary war. And that's permissible. Okay. Now, that is what's it called, another reason to fight the Yetzer Hara, not where it's prohibited, but where it is a permissible battle. Meaning, the fighting of the Yetzer Hara, which is mandatory, is eat this thing which is non-kosher, or don't eat the thing which is non-kosher. That's mandatory. But how about where you want to do something that is not necessarily absolutely wrong? It could be used for the wrong, could be used for the right. right? For instance, vanity or haughtiness, right? So if you use vanity and haughtiness in a negative way, it's awesome. But you can turn that into something good. You can be haughty for avodas Hashem, right? Or jealousy. Let's use that as a better example. Jealous. If I'm jealous of somebody's material things, right, that's wrong. But if I'm jealous of their midos tovos, I'm jealous of their Torah knowledge, and I don't want them to lose what they have, but I want to have the same thing, there's nothing wrong with that. That's called kina sofrim tar b'chochma. So you can take a bad mida of jealousy and direct it towards something good and turn it into good. That's what it means, that you should serve God b'chol levavcha, with all your hearts, b'shnei yitzarecha, with the Yetzirah Tov and the Yetzirah Hara, meaning the Yetzirah Tov is those desires, appetites that are normally for good things. The Yetzirah Hara is desires and appetites that are normally for bad things, like jealousy. But you can take that same jealousy and use it for the good. That's the war with the Yetzirah Hara that is not over prohibited things, but just the opposite. To take what's normally the Yetzirah Hara's and convert it into something good. And that is exactly what the Torah says about this battle that you're going into. You're going to capture a captive. You're going to see this beautiful woman that you want to take, and she's not Jewish. So there's a whole process how to convert her to become a real Jewish wife, or to see that it's not for you and to let her go. So this process hints at this idea. The idea being that there is a part of the battle with the Yetzer Hara that is not mandatory, that's not over prohibited, permissible, I'm going to do something prohibited or not do it, but it's fighting with the Yetzer Hara and taking from the Yetzer Hara what normally is his and converting it into something good. Really, literally, converting this woman into a Jewish wife. Now, how do you do that? So the first thing the Torah says is that if you see this woman and you want her, so then you have to go through the following promises. First is ve'hevesa el toch beisecha. Bring her into your home so you can see her up close. First, scrutinize exactly what it is that you think you can use for the good. Normally, it's something bad. Let's like take jealousy again. Normally, it's jealousy is wrong. But you think you can utilize that jealousy for something good to make you a bigger tzaddik. Okay? So first, analyze your feelings and jealousy from up close and make sure you're not fooling yourself. That's the first thing. Bring her into your house where you can get a very close, intense look at what you think you can convert to the good. Secondly, the gilches rosha, shave her head. I think that hints to the following. The head is a symbol of intellect. Take away all the allurement intellectually from this and see it as it really is. In other words, you can aggrandize and dress up this jealousy and make yourself believe that it's really good. But shave the head of this concept, take away the allurement, and see it for what it really is. You're now brought into your house so you can scrutinize it, take away the intellectual allurement, and see it as it really is intellectually. Secondly, the asasa siporneha. Let her, according to one opinion, let her grow her fingernails long, meaning what normally is something that's alluring, make her look, letting them grow without cutting them and manicuring them, whatever, doesn't look nice. So now take the hands of the symbol of action in this world. Maisi Odayim, what you do with your hands, what you create. So now first take away the intellectual allurement, now take away the physical allurement. Right? See it for what it really is, as is it something that's going to really help you and make you easier to function in this world, or you're fooling yourself. Take away the physical allurement, fingernails. And then the third thing is Vehishira Shimla Shivyomila. Take off her fancy clothing that the non-Jewish women used to wear in time of battle to entice the enemy soldiers, and put on a plain dress. Why? Take away the emotional, the midos. What a person is dressed in is his midos. Take away the emotional allurement. See, you now have stripped the thing of its intellectual allurement, its physical and emotional, and see it for what it really is. You've now investigated this idea that you want to have, that normally is the Yetzer Hara. Normally jealousy is not a good thing. But you feel that if you utilize jealousy, you're going to be able to convert it into something good. So first, look at it from an intellectual standpoint. Don't fool yourself. Be objective intellectually. Don't make up all different kinds of justifications why, when you're really jealous of not, and not a proper way, and you're going to make it into proper. And see it in its utilitarian, physical way. Is this really going to help you serve the Ribbono Shel Olam by what's it called, by having this jealousy? And thirdly, take away the emotional allurement, right, which makes you biased, and see it in a more objective way. And then, what's it called? Let her sit in your house for 30 days and cry for her mother and father. This is closure, where she totally separates herself from her past. So that same thing, you have to take that, what's normally the Yetzer Hara, and totally disassociate it from its negative roots, and totally, this jealousy can't have any connection to negative jealousy. It has to be a different kind of jealousy completely, totally separated, totally disconnected from anything negative. Same thing with this woman. She has to be separated completely from her roots, from her father and mother, from her idolatry, the Gemara says, is also her father and mother, spiritual roots, physical roots, and let her disassociate herself from her past life, and then you can convert her and be something new. But if she's still connected to the past life, she's never going to be really something new. She's going to always have baggage that you don't want. So when you're dealing with this Yetzer Hara that you're fighting, and you want to convert him into the good, you have to take away, first scrutinize it, take away all the outer allurements, and separate it completely from its negative roots. That is the prescription. And the Zohar Chodesh says the crying of this woman for 30 days in your house in the plain dress with her head shaved or whatever hints to the month of Elul. That's the month of Elul. The month of Elul is, aside from doing tshuva for all the negative things we've done, but to see how we could take things that may be negative if you don't use them properly, and use them properly and convert them into something good. Elul is not just a time to prepare for Rosh Hashanah to make amends for the negatives. But the whole year, maybe we could have done things, not just not been negative, we could have turned the negative into positive. And Rosh Hashanah, we're going to be judged for that too. As the Vilna Gaon says, that every time a person sins, he has to give a din and a cheshbon. The din is, you spoke Lashon Hara. You're going to be punished for that. You give a judgment. You're going to have to stand in judgment. What's the cheshbon? God said, I didn't create you to just do nothing. I created you to be positive in this world. So during that time that you spoke the Lashon Hara, you could have been doing something good. So you're going to have to give me an accounting for the good you could have done during the time you were doing the Aveira. So you're not only going to get punished for doing the bad, you're also going to have to give an accounting why during that time you weren't doing good. Here is one step further. Not only are you going to have to give a judgment for the bad things you did, but you could have converted those things and made them good. And used those same feelings, same emotions, same things in a positive way, in a good way. So why'd you use it in the bad way? Right? You could have, you ate chazer, you ate a pig, right? You did a terrible aveira. But you could have taken that pig and used its skin to make a football and give it to some poor boy who needed a football, right? So you could have converted that thing from something bad into something good and used it for a mitzvah. So instead of cutting up that pig and eating its flesh, you could have flayed it and made the football for the poor person who needed the football. Okay, it's an obviously absurd. But that's, okay. In any case, so that is also the, that's also part of the month of Elul. Okay, next. Another reason why the preemptive strike against the Yetzer Hara, when it's not prohibited yet, is what really has to come first. Besides all the reasons we said, there's another reason. The Gemara says, Habol Atayr, if a person has a desire to cleanse himself and purify himself, then Messiah in love, then the Rabban Shem helps him. But Derech Shalom Rotzele, the way the person wants to go, that's the way he's led. So if you wait to fight the Yetzer Hara when you have an actual case of prohibited and permitted, right, then you haven't gotten that heavenly help to begin with. But if you show that this is where I want to go, I want to become more pure, so I'm going to fight the Yetzer Hara even when it's not mandatory. I'm not just going to not eat treif. I'm going to curb my appetite before. Then you show God that that's the way you want to go. Then you get that extra siyata d'shmaya. You get that extra heavenly help. And then when the issue comes up of something that's tempting you to do wrong, you already have that help. You have the cavalry already came in with reinforcements before the war started. If you wait for the reinforcements till the battle started, you may end up like General Custer, right? But if you have the reinforcements before you go into battle, then you have a better chance of winning. So if you've already exhibited where you want to go, you're headed towards purity, and it's before you have this fight with the Yetzer Hara over something prohibited, then you've already gotten God's help. You've gotten God on your side. You've gotten that the reinforcements, right, before the battle started. Now when the battle is start, you're already a protected person, right? So you already have the reinforcements. Okay, next. All of this is very nice, of having a fight with the Yetzer Hara where it's on permissible ground, voluntary, for all the reasons we said. Ultimately, to be able to take that which is normally bad and turn it to good. The end of the Sedra tells me, but there are times when that's not possible. There are things in this world that are absolutely bad, and or for you they're absolutely bad, and you can't convert them into good. That's the Amalek. That's the mandatory fight. And there you have to obliterate the Yetzer Hara completely. You can't convert it. There's even an opinion that somebody from Amalek wants to convert, you don't accept them. They can't convert. They just have to be destroyed. And here is evil that is intrinsically evil, basically, or for you is impossible to convert because of your nature, and therefore all you can do to fight that Yetzer Hara is to constantly remember how bad it is and to fight your hardest to obliterate it. That's just like Amalek. And what are those kinds of things? What are the things that don't try to convert them? Don't try to change them into something good. That is the description of Amalek. What did Amalek do? You were on the path to getting the Torah. There are things in this world that steer you away from the path, what this world is all about. We're all on a journey towards Olam Haba. There are things in this world that take us off the road, that put us on a different road. Those kind of things you can't convert. They are totally antithetical to Torah. Those things you can't convert. They're the things that put you on a different road. That's the first thing. Asher korcha baderech. Korcha can mean a few things. One is they came upon you and made it appear as if it was just chance. They don't believe in God's divine providence. Things that are evil, that intellectually bring you to kfira, bring you to not believe that God created the world or is involved with the world, all different kinds of theories or whatever that are, again, antithetical to the ideas of Torah, can't be converted. So that's Asher Korcha Baderech. They came and they made you believe that everything is just chance. There's no rhyme and reason in this world. There's no hashgacha, right? It's just a bunch of coincidence and happenstance or whatever, political things or whatever. Then there is what's it called? Asher Korcha can also mean they defiled you. There are things that are downright defiling, that defile a person, that drag him into the mud. Those things also you can't convert. Okay, things that are totally debased, have no redeeming value. Okay, and then, for instance, like a pornography, something like that. And then, what's it called? They cooled you off emotionally. Something that for you, you know, will go totally against your grain and cool you off emotionally from your connection to God, also, don't try to convert it. Just obliterate it. And it says that the ata ayefi ageya, you were tired and weary. Ayefi ageya. And one means that you're not a zara. Things that will take away your ability to function in this world with a zrizus, right? To be what's the word? Alacrity? Is that to function with alacrity? That's zrizus. Or yageya, you get so bogged down and busy with so many irrelevant things that you have no time to really think and do things that are proper. So those kinds of things that slow you down from doing things with alacrity, or get you so busy that you get bogged down in irrelevant things, those also you're not going to convert to good. Two things, ayef and yogeya. Ayef means that you're tired and can't function with zrizus, right? And yogeya means you're so busy with things that are not essential that you can't get involved in the essential things. Either it makes you tired, or it wearies you by putting your energies and dissipating them in a million different things that are not of any consequence. And lo yorei Elokim, and things that take away your shamayim, things that affect you in such a way that you lose your fear of punishment, your fear of what's important in the world, your seriousness, like joking around, like what's it called, being lightheaded or acting in a lewd way. So those things, let your guard down. Those are also things that can't be converted for the good. Those kinds of things you have to obliterate. So these are examples of the Amalek kind of Yetzer Hara, which has to be destroyed, as opposed to the beginning of the Sedra, where you have the Eishes Yifas Toar, this woman that can be converted, the captive that you can have from the voluntary war with the Yetzer Hara, where you can actually convert the bad into good. But there's certain bad that is a mandatory war. There you can't convert the bad into good. There it has to be obliterated. And you have to remember constantly, be on your guard. So if that's the case, so this Sedra starts with one kind of war against the Yetzer Hara and ends with a different kind of war, and it gives us a good idea of what to do during Elul in preparation for the Yom HaDin of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
I'm just curious what
The what?
Where the last few points came from?
Just my ideas.
Oh,
they're in describing what Amalek did. So Choret says, remember what Amalek did, Baderech, when you were on the path to getting the Torah. Asher Korcha Baderech, they cooled you down, or they defiled you, or they came upon you and made you believe that it was by chance. Those are all in the word Korcha, right? Vayizanev, the one thing I forgot, Vayizanev Bechokol Necheshalim Acharecha, they also fed on your weak, the weak people behind you. There are things that feed on your weaknesses, and there you can't deal with the Yetzer Hara. The Amalek attacked the people. They ambushed the people who were thrown out of the Jewish people by the Anon, and they were in the back. They ambushed the weak people. And the Ata Ayefi Ageya, you were tired and weary. Those kinds of things that take away your desire to function, they depress you, take away your desire to function, or get you so bogged down with irrelevant things, you have no time for the important things. Those things have to be obliterated. The lo yorei Elokim, and things that lessen your yirah shamayim, your fear of heaven, by being too lightheaded or lewd or whatever, schok and kalas rosh, which take away a person's yirah shamayim. Those are the things that describe Amalek. That's the kind of yetzer hara that you can't convert for the good. You have to destroy. Right. That's why the fight is more or less the things that you can't or can convert. A lot depend on who you are, because what falls into these categories a lot of times is different for different people. Okay. Yes.
When you said things that pull you off emotionally from Hashem, distance you from Hashem,
right,
were the next 2 points then describing that, which were the things that make you too tired or the things that make you
it could be a third thing too. There are things that don't make you depressed and don't bog you down with other things, but they take away your excitement in Avodas Hashem, makes it just hackneyed or whatever. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the same thing.
And if these things come from a variety of different circumstances or reactions you have, how do you obliterate them if you don't know when they're coming?
No, so you make sure that you don't let yourself get into that situation a second time. Amalek attacked us, right, and we had to make a counterattack. So sometimes they come to you and you're not aware, but now you've learned. Remember them, know that if they'll ever come again, you're going to have to obliterate them. Amalek is an ongoing fight throughout history. We never destroyed them completely. It was always the next battle and the next battle or whatever. Yeah.
But this thing by shaving the head, is that where some people today that still kind of take on that?
No. The reason that there are people who shave their heads has to do only with the mikveh, that they feel that if they have hair that could stick out of the mikveh, then there's a problem, and therefore better to have a shaved head, so there's no chance that if you go into the mikveh that one hair could be up. Yeah. Right. He's also like a fly. Okay, but that's his job. That's his job. He's not supposed to give up.
When I first started out...
You have your job, he has his job, right? So
that's the hard thing, because when I felt like I had been defeated, I thought, finished.
No. It says, every day the Yetzer Hara renews itself and gets stronger. Right, it doesn't give up. Mamash like a fly. You shoo a fly, he comes back. What?
You defeated it, why wouldn't
it? Because then he comes back in another guise. That's what life is all about. So if you conquer the Yetzer Hara completely, right, you would never have any more purpose to be around. Yeah. Okay.
The other thing which I meant, a preemptive strike against the Yetzer Hara, that's one of the ways that Hashem will help us once we show him that this is the way that we want to go. But is that the only way which will help us, or will he also?
No, but that is one of the ways to get heavenly help. And therefore, it's good to have that heavenly help before the real battle starts.
But that's not to say, like, if you're in the real battle and you don't.
Right, you won't.
Yourself.
Right, no. You just now. Like, I'll give you the example. If you wait for the reinforcements to come after the battle started, you have a lot of harder time winning the battle. But if you come into the battle with the reinforcements, you have an easier time.